Welcome to the June 22nd CCG call. We are having an unusual agenda today, as I was just telling folks, in that I was challenged to step away from my standard clear agenda, and I already have one planned for us for next week, so don't worry. We'll be back on a planned agenda next week. I was challenged because there's so many interesting ideas and folks in the community, and not everyone likes to, step up and, necessarily like be on the spot during one of these calls. And so I want to kind of lower the barrier and, just kind of open this up and have a discussion, especially since we haven't really been face to face, and really just kind of see what bubbles up from the community. So that's what the agenda is for today. The no agenda, the unagenda, Zen agenda. We're going to go through, some standard stuff and regular business before we jump into no agenda. So I hope you will join me in feeling uncomfortable not having an agenda. Okay, IP note. Anyone can contribute in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR, intellectual property rights, agreements signed. You do not need to be a member, paid member of the W3C to be a member of the Credentials Community Group, but you do need to have a W3C account, which is free. Call notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything Summonless Call are archived at meetings. And I do tend to do meetings pretty quickly, so they will probably be up by the end of today. All attendees should type present plus to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. And actually, you don't have to do that now, thanks to Manu. Manu's updates to the CCG bot. All you have to do is join. The CCG bot will add you, Q plus you. Okay. If you would like to say something, and I hope a lot of you will speak this time, just type Q plus to add yourself to the queue. If you are not in IRC or the Jitsi chat, you can just pipe up and we'll put you on the queue. Please be brief, so other folks can chime in. Although today, be as long-winded as you want. We have a lot of time. It's unstructured. So let's just see where things go. Note, this meeting is held by voice, not IRC. So any off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. Okay, scribe selection. Manu's already been scribing. Thank you, Manu. Would anyone like to take over scribe from Manu? Ask for volunteers first.
Heather, today I'm happy to be quiet and just scribe.
Okay, I'll take you up on that, Manny. Thank you. But if you do want to cue and say some things, I'll just take over for you.
Great, thanks.
Okay, so next on the agenda is introductions and reintroductions. Here's the reintroductions list. Is there anyone new on the call that would like to introduce themselves? I don't know, Steve Gantz. Yeah, I think you might be new.
Yes, I was about to jump in. Steve Gantz, I'm in Olympia, Washington, and right now I'm kind of just listening in. I've been working with Concentric Sky a bit on badging, and I've gotten more interested in this fair viable credential stuff. So I'm new. I'm kind of just listening in. I've got a lot of homework to do in order to understand what's going on here. But anyway, I'm listening in. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And please feel free to reach out to me directly or the CCG 101 group if you have specific questions that we can help answer. I very much appreciate new folks to the community, because I am trying to shepherd and help create materials to help you and other people like you to really get your legs around the community and understand what questions you have through the great documentation and in the format so that you can get up to speed faster. So, yeah, I'm really accessible. Just shoot me an email or feel free to join the CCG 101 calls.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Is there anyone who would like to reintroduce themselves? I think I see Erica on here. I think it's been a little while since you've reintroduced yourself, but I know that you attend quite regularly. Would you like to reintroduce yourself? Don't mean to put you on the spot if you're not interested. I don't know if you're saying anything, but you're muted, but okay, next time. Sounds great. Let me see if there's anyone new or any old folks. I don't mean like old in age. I'd like to reintroduce themselves. I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe Adrian could go for an introduction. You've been talking, you've been bringing up a lot of, concerns lately. Maybe it would be helpful for some of the newer folks to understand where you're coming from. What do you think?
Sure. Thank you. Can you hear me? You can hear me, right?
Yes, can hear you great.
So I have a dual role. I am Chief Technology Officer of a nonprofit called Patient Privacy Rights. I'm a volunteer there. It's a very tiny operation. I also lead a implementation project of the standards in the SSI community, as well as authorization related standards, all under around the healthcare use case, which I authored for DIDCORE in the form of and verifiable credentials in the form of a prescription as a verifiable credential. And so that in the W3C, I've been an invited expert on privacy, and before that on community interest, DevOps, whatever it was called. And so I don't represent a commercial interest here. I'm trying to promote sort of the interest of the consumer. Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Adrian. Okay, so next up is announcements and reminders. We don't have any announcements up on the announcements list, which we normally have them here. But I see Manu on the queue, and if you have announcements, please add yourself to the queue by doing Q+, and I will call on you. Okay, Manu, you're up, and I will scribe for you.
Thank you. This is a announcement for the DID working group. So, the DID core specification is now in its second candidate recommendation. So it was published last week. The second candidate recommendation lasts for 4 weeks until mid-July. The reason it was explained last week why we did it, but basically there were like two features that we were absolutely sure were going to get implemented and they're not getting implemented. So we had to update it to say these two, features might not be implemented. It's just a minor, it's a minor nuance in the W3C process, but you are absolutely required to make sure that people implement the features that you normatively specify in the specification. And, there are like 150 of those, and two of them we didn't label properly. So that's, it's we're just doing another revision. There will be we're still taking implementations if people want to provide them, and we've gotten a couple in the second candidate recommendation already, the Universal Resolver being one of them, updates there. So yeah, so if you missed the implementation deadline for the first candidate recommendation, you've got another 3 weeks or so to get an implementation report in. We've got really good implementations, like 20 plus, 30 plus in some cases. It's like solid. You're like happy if you get 4. So we've got really good, implementation feedback so far from the community. And then after that, if things go well, we will proceed into the proposed recommendation phase, which basically is we're totally done. And we would like the W3C membership to vote and ratify it as a global standard. So that's kind of the next step. That's it for that announcement.
Great. Thanks, Manu. I hope I captured all of that. And if there's any links, that folks can, follow or, maybe send an update to the list, that would be great to capture those folks as well. You guys all able to hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, cool. Okay, great. Any other announcements or reminders? Okay, doesn't sound like it. Okay, so progress on action items. All right, so there's actually like a couple that I added I would love to get some updates on or give an update. One of the things that we haven't heard from for a while is the infrastructure task force, and I think Wayne is here. Wayne, would you be able to give an update on the infrastructure task force?
Yeah, so the update on the infrastructure task force, not too many updates recently. It seems to have stabilized. With respect to hosting an APAC call, we are waiting on a third co-chair to have that bandwidth to be able to do that. We're very grateful for Manu and other folks for contributing further improvements to the JavaScript and additional resources on training people up if they want to learn how to scribe. That's the update, open to any feedback or issues there. We're keeping a running tab of issues in the infrastructure repository.
Are you guys having any kind of like regular meetings or regular check-ins? Because I know that there are a bunch of open issues under that repo, and just wondering how those items are being triaged and addressed.
No, we don't have a meeting scheduled, but it could be a good idea maybe to have a monthly or every 2 months.
Great. Okay, the next item that we as a community do need to discuss is this open co-chair role. Wayne and I have basically been doing co-chair 2 of 3 co-chairs since the beginning of this year. And while it might look like things are running smoothly and perfectly from the outside, it is too much work for 2 people. And we do need to solve this in some way. The way we've done this in the past is by having a third co-chair come in. I think one of the challenges that we have at this time, because I've had a lot of conversations with folks about the role, there's been a lot of folks interested about the role, and for various reasons folks have decided not to take the stage, there's just a lot of stuff going on. If you look at our calendar, I'm going to open it up. Today, I have 4 W3C CCG calls on my calendar, which includes this one, the traceability one at 10:30, the VC HTTP API at 1, the CCG 101 at 2 o'clock. We've also got confidential storage and the VCEDU on Monday. And so, this is a lot of work. We are doing a lot of work in the CCG. And And it's not only happening in this May meeting. So I kind of wanted to query the community on how we can solve this. Should we cut down the number of Maine CCG meetings? It has been suggested to me to ask some of the other meeting folks to folks running some of these other task forces or meetings to come into rotation on this meeting. The current state of the co-chairs is not sustainable, and if we do not have a solution to it soon, you as a community may end up with no co-chairs. And so I think, I mean, that's not a threat. That's just, you know, this is a volunteer role. Different co-chairs prioritize the work at different levels. We are doing a lot of work in the community, and we want to see that work in the community be supported and done. And this is an amazing community group. But we need to have help with the overall operations. So I'm going to stop talking now, and I'd like to hear from folks in the community on how we can sustainably resolve this and have sustainable long-term leadership for this community. Manu, I see you're on the queue.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's clearly an issue if the chairs are, being overworked. And I can certainly see that the community is more active than it's ever been. We've got, you know, 400 plus people. We've got tons of meetings every week. It's a lot to stay on top of. And, you know, I think one of the things that was, you know, floated out there is maybe pulling on some of the other people running meetings to help out. So plus one, you know, to do that. I agree with what Ori is saying. Maybe we should, you know, change the expectations on what to expect from chairs. If the expectations of the community is too high, it is a lot, right? And it, as you mentioned, it's a volunteer position, and it can, having to coordinate all of this stuff is just it's hard enough doing one working group. Having to do like four or five is well beyond what we should be asking of a volunteer position. So, you know, plus one, plus one to figure out how to make this thing sustainable. I think the idea of having, other people that are already running other meetings, help, share the load is a good, path to go down. That's it.
Thanks, Manu. Sorry, I forgot to scribe that. Ori, I added you to the queue. Could you say some more about what you put in as text?
Sure. I mean, I heard you say that you're contemplating attending all of the calls today or something to that effect, and that's very clearly never going to work. I mean, there are a million. As this working group grows more popular, more work items, more calls, chairs are... It's impossible for chairs of the CCG to attend calls related to every work item. And many work items don't even have calls, and I think that can also work out super well, especially since calls are always excluding some time zone. It can create, you know, additional conflicts, and, you know, it's not just, you know, chairs that are volunteering. It's also the folks who are running those calls that are volunteering. So I think, generally speaking, in order for this community to be effective, we need to be able to work asynchronously in a way that is effective. And I think call times should be focused on resolving disputes that are impossible to resolve in an async fashion. And I think, yeah, I mean, so I got, my understanding of what the role that a chair sort of takes in these kinds of organizations is essentially a process manager, but not really a significant work item contributor. And so I think the difference between chairs and editors and contributors needs to be clearly defined. And I cannot imagine chairs being able to even be aware fully of all of these work items that are happening. I mean, I think it's just, it seems like potentially there's some assumption that the chairs are like actively involved in every work item, which if that's the case, we should correct that because there's no way that that actually will work.
Thanks, Sori. I added myself to the queue to respond to some of your comments. One, I 100% do not attend all of these meetings. And I don't, like, a few people do, and as a chair, I agree with you. Chairs do not have to attend all of the meetings. I attend them sometimes. I attend and run the CCG 101 work item, which is mine. I do disagree with you, though, that chairs do need to know the different work items that are going on and the status of them. That can happen asynchronously. My point in saying that there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 CCG calls happening this week is that there's a lot more work happening on work items, and that in the past, the pool of folks who wanted to do leadership or in leadership roles is now spread across 6 meetings instead of 1 or 2. And that was my point. I will open it up to see if other comments from the community. Jeff, you're up.
But yeah, just for an example, it's not directly related to how you do it here, but, you know, I've served on Insights M1 biometric standards bodies before, and they have a number of subcommittees within that technical committee. So they have the M1 level, and then you have M1.2, M1.3, M1.4, all focusing on a piece of work. So that they have chairs on these subgroups as well. So there's a chair of M1.2 that's focusing on data formats. There's a chair of M1.3 focusing on testing. And M1.6 is looking at social issues for biometrics. And those chairs report up to the M1 chair at the plenary meetings at the end of the week. So I don't know if you can set up a hierarchical structure for this group where you have like the chairs and then you have like chairs of these individual efforts, but something to think about.
Well, that's an interesting idea. We don't necessarily haven't really had the hierarchy in the past, and I'm just curious how the community would respond to adding hierarchy of the subgroups and task forces to the main CCG chairs. Manu, you're up, and I will scribe for you this time.
No problem. It'll be short. Just a plus one. I think hierarchy is not a bad thing. In this instance, especially if it helps share the workload. So plus one to Jeff's idea.
Okay, thanks. Ted, you're on the queue.
So I am the crazy person who is trying to attend every call of every group in which I have a vested interest, which is a lot. There is some need for some level of hierarchy here. I think it's sort of inherent in work items being subtasks of the CCG that there is a hierarchy there, right? The work item is beneath the CCG, or within or below, however you want to label it. I don't think that the CCG chairs need to attend necessarily every work item call, but they do need to stay abreast of what's going on. Partially to keep things from going off the rails or to watch out for that work item or subgroup going off on a tangent, which isn't what it was meant to be doing. And also to keep an eye on whether different work items or subgroups are going to reach a conflict level. And similarly, whether some of those split out groups should be actually one group instead of multiples.
Great. Thanks, Ted. I agree with your comment. Wayne, you're up next.
Yeah, I just wanted to also make the point about it is getting to be a lot of workload. There's clearly a lot of interest in the community group, a lot of work items. Even if we had a third co-chair, I don't know that that would be enough to complete everything to the level of quality we want in terms of keeping all the work items accountable, making sure notes and everything are tidy in order, everything like that. I feel that I keep on thinking about, okay, is it possible to have maybe a more dedicated resource working on behalf of the community group? And then you have to get into conversations about budget, responsibilities, governance, and, you know, does the CCG need its own entity or something? That's probably way later. But having a pair of hands that could help as an obligation, maybe a paid obligation towards that. One of the things that W3C working groups have that we don't as a community group is explicit support of W3C staff who show up to meetings, take notes, make sure that the recordings are squared away, things like that. And that has been basically hinging on the chairs. And as we have more work items, more meetings, task forces, either that responsibility gets doled out to community members, or it might be even easier for one person who is very good at this across many different groups to work on it, much like a W3C staffer might sit in, right? So this is an option that I wanted to just bring up to the community as something that could possibly help manage everything.
Manu, you're on the queue.
Just to suggest, yeah, I mean, that sounds fine. You know, it makes it, you know, the second we start talking about staff and things, all of a sudden, as you said, Wayne, it's like money and you know, it's a whole bunch of meta problems, right? And we stop working on the technical work and we now are in charge of, you know, meta management of a pseudo standard setting, you know, group. So I'm wondering if there's the opposite end of that spectrum or further to the other side, which is maybe we shouldn't do as good of a job as we are right now, right? So that's not a do crappy work. It's a maybe everyone should take a little breather and step back a little and see if things fall over. It requires people to do less work across the board rather than more work. And what I'm saying is again, very clearly, it's not do bad work. It's, allow things to go off the rails just a tiny bit if it makes everyone's life easier, right? So if it reduces everyone's stress levels, especially the chairs, if it reduces, you know, a task force's, need to always be on top of everything, then maybe that's okay, right? There's certain things that we can't let slip, like the IPR stuff. I mean, we need minutes and notes. We need minutes and transcripts out there. That is a fundamental protection that we're providing the entire community. We can't get lax on that. But coordinating things, like ensuring everything's always aligned at all times and heading things off before they become a problem, it takes a lot of effort to do that. And it's largely unseen, that kind of work that the chairs and other people in the community are doing. But maybe that's okay. Maybe it's okay to let things diverge for 3 to 6 months before doing something about it. Anyway, just putting it out there that maybe some of the answer here is to be less critical of ourselves personally in doing the absolute best that we can and maybe backing off a bit and letting a few things that are not super important slide from here and there. That's it.
Thanks, Manu. Mike, you're up.
Yeah, I guess just a question back to you, Heather and Wayne, et cetera, or anyone else that has insight on this, but like, what's your typical hourly workload per week, as a result of chairing? I guess it's kind of question one. And then secondarily, just a comment back regarding, you know, possible hierarchy. I'm not even sure if hierarchy is necessarily the way to look at it, but maybe even just saying, yeah, you know, so-and-so is, you know, here's a chair role or a co-chair role that is focused on such and such thing, be it, interoperability or testing or something like that, right? As a way of grouping, grouping in a functional way, roles and responsibilities to try to break that stuff up and make it a little more manageable and also make it more understandable for someone else to jump in and say, yeah, this is the role I'm stepping into and this is what I'm signing up for, right? So.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Mike. Wayne, would you like to go first and talk about how much time and your activities that you do as a chair for transparency purposes?
Sure. Yeah, it's a lot of reading. I'd say it's anywhere from 2 to 6 hours a week. Catching up on threads, work item updates, if there are issues and going over those. Sometimes it takes longer to read things. I'd say a lot of it is reading. Wish it could be more. I would spend more time. If I had more time, I would spend more time coming up with the organized meeting schedule and figuring out speakers. One thing that I wanted to do was be able to ask the community about what speakers they wanted. I think over the past few weeks, it's been closer to like 2 to 4 hours that I've been spending, and including this meeting too.
Thanks. I'll share mine in transparency. I don't spend that much time because I'm a GTD wizard. In order to put the agenda together for these meetings, which I generally do in advance, do the minutes afterwards, follow up in the task force and things, I time box mine for 2 to 3 hours a week. We used to have co-chair leadership meetings. Those have not been happening on a regular basis since about March. There has been absolutely like no long-term planning or strategic planning. I put together a lot of processes in place for it to be easy for anyone to do minutes. And I don't like to be combative, but Wayne, I'm sorry, I just really do not see you putting in like 4 to 6 hours in the co-chair role. Like you don't even do minutes for your meetings, which takes me half an hour, and I even did the training for it. I have put together an entire process.
Heather, I don't appreciate a public call out like that. If you want to talk about these issues offline, I'm more than happy to. But there's no need to embarrass people in front of the group or attempt to do so. So thank you.
I'm trying not to, but I just feel like my jaw just dropped, right? Fine. I have, in order to do the work to do a co-chair role is really basic operations. And in fact, I've put together like the, job description, which I will try to find if you guys are interested in it. But I think if you manage your time and, we are efficient about things, and you even attend some meetings. I mean, like my 2 to 3 hours includes running this meeting, the agenda, scanning the list, and running my CCG 101 call. I think that we can do that. So I don't know if that answers your question, Mike. I'm happy to.
If you happen to find that doc, I'd love to see that. I think that could be helpful because I'm also just thinking of sharing it out with some folks that have an interest in the space, that aren't necessarily fully active engaged, but have experience in this, you know, in running these kinds of groups and stuff like that. Just try to pull some other, you know, maybe fresh insight and blood into, right? Might not be a bad thing, even if it's just to engage with the community more. So.
Great. I did put the document in. You guys can look at it. This was put together December, in preparation for the open co-chair role. And Kim did contribute to this. You can see it's like, running the CCG meeting, doing operation stuff, work items, community liaisons, you know, that kind of stuff. There is documentation and processes for all of these things. So when I came into the co-chair role, there was limited documentation and the processes were a lot more complex. And thanks to Kim and Manu, the minutes and some of the other things have been, it's been easier to do those. And also I've documented many things. So it'll be really easy to get someone up to speed. The other thing that is important to know is that traditionally, like the way this co-chair role was a 3-year seat, but I think like that's probably a pretty heavy lift for many people. So, and I personally, am a really big fan of, you know, doing mentoring, and leadership succession planning. And I know that I can definitely get someone who's new up to speed to be able to, be a successful co-chair and be able to handle all of these things in a manageable time, once they get up to speed. So, I'm happy to mentor someone if someone wants to come in. I think also, Wayne and I had discussed that, we would definitely take someone, or a co-chair could be less than 3 years if it's 1 year or less. So, any questions or comments about, this work, this issue before we, it's not going to get closed, but it needs to get resolved. Ryan, you're up.
Hi, Heather, I wanted to thank you especially for the, for training, regarding the minutes. And I would like to offer to help out on minutes occasionally. This is, you know, a much smaller, responsibility or work item than being a co-chair, in a general sense. So the thought came to me, you know, are there other delegation of specific items that we can start to list out and people can volunteer for, and we can start a volunteer queue, that would, in the meantime, although we are also considering an additional co-chair, also make the co-chair's lives easier.
Yeah, okay. I'll just add myself to the queue so I can respond to you, Ryan. Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the things we wanted to do. And it's just a matter of, you know, management, process, time, and, you know, getting people to easily volunteer. One of my, my hidden goals of the CCG 101 is to, have an easy way for folks to come and be, and communicate and be part of the CCG in a low stakes area, to, you know, get their feet wet with the community. And I think this volunteer would also be, possible as well. So, you know, yeah, I mean, there's just, if someone wants to do that, I'm willing to help with that. But, you know, I think there needs to be some heavy lifting from other folks other than the chairs to, you know, jumpstart that. So, you know, that is definitely, there's been volunteer. I've wanted to have folks, put together volunteers for, you know, review of work items for diversity issues and concerns and things like that. But, you know, we just have to have the house in order and operations continuing in order to, even be able to look at that. So I'll just give it another minute if anyone else has any final comments for today, or, we can move forward. Okay, so sounds like we can move forward today with the no agenda. Thanks for having that conversation. It's not always fun to talk about things, but this community is not scared of conflict, so I'm not really too worried. So, open agenda, no agenda. Purpose of the no agenda is to just have some open space for us to be able to talk about interesting things that are happening in the community. Is there something that's annoyed you recently? Is there, I mean, in the in like, say, I saw the thread regarding the California verifiable credentials, the vaccine stuff by with verifiable credentials. Is there something interesting and exciting that has inspired you, or things that you're really excited or thinking about in the community? So I'm going to be quiet and see who's on the queue. And I think it's Mike, so please take it away.
Yeah, I just had an interesting experience yesterday. We were demoing for a government agency that has a stakeholder role in some of the things we work on. And when you look at a lot of these regulatory items, there's a comfort level with pen and paper that is very slow for folks to move away from, especially like in our case, we're dealing with a lot of like food and agriculture type items and food safety and things like that. And so we were talking through and kind of demoing some track and trace stuff and, you know, pathing on, food, you know, for food recall type scenarios and some other, items there. And the question came up around like, well, how do we, you know, how do we know that this data is okay, right? From, what was entered is actually still what's being presented. And, fortunately there were, it was a semi-technical audience. So I was able to jump under the hood and literally just show the proof section in the VC data model on an actual VC that we had just issued. And it was like the light bulb went off for an audience that has been very, digital record keeping resistant, right? You know, is that being kind of the secondary mode and paper being first and foremost. And so it was really, it was just a really good feedback moment. I think for the work we're doing in general, because it was impressive to me to see how many people just went, oh, okay, I get it. And that's cool because I could see this proof right alongside the data. And I know I can go call X number of different interoperable systems that aren't locked up with some proprietary formula or whatever else to go say that this data is fine. And that was just, it was, actually kind of cool to me. Like I'm used to working just more in this kind of context where we're talking to people that are already speaking the same language, et cetera. And this was an audience that I don't think had ever seen a verifiable credential before. And so it was really good to see that and to see that confidence level kick in a way that is not there with stuff on, you know, that's not quite so well, other solutions, right? Like, on the market for digital signage, right? That may not have quite the actual, security, constraints on them, under the hood. So, so it was just very positive feedback for the work we're doing in general, right? And the work that's been done previously by folks like Manu, et cetera. So it, was extremely well received. And when we look at the need to move off of paper for a lot of this stuff, for a variety of reasons and over to digital, being able to give that confidence back to that kind of audience, I think is very important. So.
Very cool, Mike. Other cool things folks want to share? Manu, you're up.
This is just a question. So that, I mean, that's awesome, Mike. I mean, you know, getting that kind of feedback directly from your customers, is like great, right? I'm seeing people get it kind of right away. I wanted to ask, like, given that, Mike, like, what are, and I'd really love to hear from the community, like, where people think we're going, right? So, like, there's some things that, I mean, everyone's working on stuff, right? But as the community, like, what should our next big focus be? Like, what should we be pulling our effort towards? Cause, you know, we've got like, as Heather said, we've got like 6 different groups. They're all kind of doing their own thing. All of it helpful to the, you know, the community and the ecosystem. But if we had to kind of come together and converge on like, what is our next big priority? What would it be?
Kalia, I think you've been added to the queue. You're up.
I think fighting QR codes. I think that the several different efforts to put quote unquote verifiable credentials in QR code form and spread that way of sharing digitally encoded information about people is actually incredibly dangerous and very worrying. And I think the concerns that the British Columbia government folks are raising about it need to be really taken seriously. And we need to figure out how to explain the difference between verifiable credentials and verifiable presentations and what is being unfolded right now with COVID vaccine certificates.
Thanks, Clea. How can the community support that, what you're proposing, or what, I mean, you're not proposing it. How can the community support that idea?
And I'm working on, I'm trying to take material that was originally drafted by British Columbia folks and shape it into a white paper. But I think you know, it may even be coming out with some kind of statement that says, like, you know, how to help, because people can't understand the differences. It's all just digitally signed stuff. Isn't it all the same? So
that's an interesting idea, putting a statement out. Like, you mean like a statement of from the CCG?
Potentially. I mean, this is one of the significant bodies within the broader community working on this technology. Yeah.
Okay. There's a bunch of other folks on the queue, but let's see what people say. And if this is something we could put as an issue or work item to track, I think that's kind of interesting idea. Mike, you are up next.
Yeah, I was, and Clea, thanks for that. Cause that, I think that whole issue of, well, isn't this just digitally signed info? And what's the difference is a big one, right? And I think we have to find a way to communicate effectively why we might want to take the route that we have been taking. And even though QR codes in some cases might be used to represent VCs or even display a VC proper, right? There's a difference in that versus the way that, say, you know, FHIR has been doing it on the, you know, health record side of things. And so I think being able to speak clearly about those differences, but also recognize that, like, hey, some of this stuff is out there in the world and unfortunately being broadly adopted. So how can we subvert that and move it to a better path, right? How can we enable some kind of interop with more legacy approaches, but carry that forward into a better option for all of us from a privacy standpoint, et cetera? So highly intrigued by that. And appreciate you kind of bringing that to light in the commentaries you put back on the mailing list as well. It was very helpful.
Thanks, Mike. Ted, you're up next.
I think that fighting to never use QR codes is a battle that is already long lost. It took them a decade and a half, if not longer, to really hit in the Western Hemisphere. But they were super popular in Japan for a long time before that, and they are super useful when used appropriately. And I think that battle is worth fighting, to use them appropriately, to only put into them public information or information which is encrypted and requires you to go and get the relevant public key different from a different location, that sort of thing. They can be used very well on vaccine records or otherwise, to point to other information, but again, they should not include anything that would not be printed in boldface on the same package that the QR code is on. I think that's a clear enough message you could give to people just by scanning a QR code with your phone, and it'll decode it and show you what it's in there. And if it's gobbledygook, then they'll be happier than if it shows their street address and phone number. That's it.
Thanks, Ted. Adrian, you're up next. Adrian, we can't hear you. You may be muted.
Yes, sorry.
You're good now.
Yeah. I've studied the relationship of VCs and DIDs to health records for as long as we've been talking about VCs and DIDs. And, so I don't understand sort of the problem with QR codes. There can be problems with QR codes, but my point is that, we need to be careful in not ascribing privacy interests, for convenience. In other words, if we don't have communities of patients, communities of users, communities of employees, representing themselves in these, privacy inflected discussions, if instead they're represented by proxies that are trying to sell stuff to governments or airlines, occasionally to employers, I think it's very easy to confuse people about the digital standards because of that, you know, because the context is so important in health-related stuff. It's much more important as a context than, for instance, in border crossings, you know, where the context is always obvious and easy. I'll thank you. That's my comment.
Thanks, Adrian. So the queue is empty. I guess I'd like to ask Manny, you just got added. So over to you.
Sure. Yeah. Just wanted to reflect on the QR code thing. So my expectation is, Kalia's intent was about the data in the QR code, not about QR codes themselves. So I think we're all on the same page. Like QR codes are great. And they're being used for data carriers for like 30 plus years. And they're not inherently good or bad. But the data that you put in them, can be concerning. So the smart, you know, the FHIR smart health record stuff, is dangerous, in the way that it's constructed. As Kalia mentioned, you know, on the mailing list, we have done a fairly deep analysis of it and, it is not a VC. My personal opinion is it is not a VC. It doesn't use, you know, the open standards in ways that would lead to an interoperable ecosystem. But at the same time, they got a bunch of, you know, EHR companies, you know, and technology suppliers to agree to something and get it out there. And so, you know, it's not a easy, it's a good thing, it's a bad thing, thing. It's just a, there are some things that I believe are deeply concerning to this industry about the way that, you know, it was deployed. And I would expect that we have an opinion about it, as a community. So plus one to voicing that opinion a little more loudly, what we've seen, and now I'm speaking, you know, as a company, what we have seen is, companies using the word verifiable credential because it's got a really good marketing, drive now. It's popular. The governments are looking at, you know, using them. And to capitalize on that, we've got a number of companies, not in this community, but external to the community that are using the name, in ways that are not at all aligned with, you know, what we intended the technology to be. And they're not even using the technology underneath the scenes. When you go and look, it has nothing. It's a proprietary, you know, format. So, it would be good for this community to be able to say things about those types of deployments. We are not, you know, we can't police things like that, but certainly saying, hey, the way that this is constructed, you know, is not aligned with verifiable credentials, exposes data in ways that are problematic, has implications for, you know, patient privacy and things of that nature. And so here are concerns with what was deployed. I think being able to say that as a community is a really powerful thing. I think the working groups should be able to say stuff like that. So the VCWG should be able to say stuff like that. The DID working group should be able to say stuff like that. And I think, you know, people will listen when we say things like that, as long as we can agree to the statements. Now writing a big long paper is almost guaranteed to fail, but writing a paragraph is probably something we can all get behind, right? and just putting it out as kind of a position statement. So plus one to that, Kalia, I'm very supportive of the community trying to say things like that on a more official capacity. The other thing that I'm a bit curious about is there's all this plumbing that we keep presuming exists. Like for example, all the linked data signature stuff that is, you know, we've got a working group being formed and all that kind of stuff. But this community, I know is busy, but has not been involved in the 300 emails that have now exchanged hands in the semantic web group, right? So, in what people are seeing there is a kind of a disinterest from the CCG in that very critical to VC technology, because people aren't jumping in and participating in that, verifiable credentials are not being represented as, you know, something that should be done in the working group. And it slowed everything down, right? So there's some things like, you know, commenting about what is going on in the market, like the FireSmart health record stuff, like that's very important. But I feel like we're kind of tripping over some fundamentals, like we're presuming some of this technology, you know, is just going to be standardized in time and we don't need to pay attention to it, when in reality, we're kind of like fighting for our life over in, you know, the semantic web group with respect to the linked data signature stuff. I'm being hyperbolic there. It's not that bad. The working group will happen, but people are not seeing this community's, you know, thoughts about any of that stuff, show up. And I think that's a problem, right? Because we have a big stake in that work succeeding. So there may be some fundamental stuff that we need to, also do. Like for example, I think the linked data signature stuff is just, it's a fundamental next thing we need to do. It's plumbing we've thought, you know, we've needed to exist as a global standard for a while, and it's still not done, and I'd like to see that get done before we start moving on to, you know, other things higher up on the stack. That's it.
Cool. Thanks, Manu. I hope I captured all that. We are kind of running towards the end, but there's a few folks I want to get to the queue. It sounds like there is interest in putting together some kind of statement or something. And so I would like to invite Kalia, if you would like to, and I'm happy to help you start an issue on the CCG GitHub as something to kind of start. And so if you think that's interesting and there's other folks that want to work on that, I think this would be great. Was part of the statement that the diversity and inclusion workforce tried to put together. That did not work, actually. And so, yes, I would support that as a chair, and I would support the organization and coordination to try to make that happen. Ryan, I'm going to close the queue, but I'd like to hear from Ryan and Ted before we close. So, Ryan, you're up.
Yeah, as an action item or a focus for the group, I would just like to keep maintained a visual picture of how some of the various projects that we're aware of are interoperating. And I try and build this picture in my head every week when I get on the call. And some days it works well and some days it doesn't. So just an idea. That's all.
Great idea, Ryan. Ted, you're up next, and with your comment, we'll conclude today's meeting.
Just a suggestion that Kalia called for. I don't know if you're interested in co-authors or co-editors, but at least to get co-signers onto, whether it's a white paper, I don't know, that might be too bulky, as Manu suggested, but some kind of brief statement that basically sums up where the CCG and or BCWG and similar groups stand on QR codes, just that we all know this should not be used for anything secure. End of sentence. That's it.
Thanks, Ted. And Kim, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but you did make a comment that I've almost missed, and I was just wondering if you might be willing to just briefly mention it for the audio.
Sure. So I think the thing around misuse of verifiable credentials, and I say that in capital, you know, W3C verifiable credentials. There's several things now that we're getting into a state where we can have things like conformance criteria. And I think that we can make lives easier on ourselves just through, again, like we'll need help in doing this, but the messaging side, saying what it means to be a verifiable credential. And that way we can, we don't have to be so, kind of reactive to, people saying, okay, here, this is a verifiable credential. We can just say, okay, it doesn't meet these criteria. That might save us a bit from having to respond to every sort of, you know, kind of instance of violation, of which there are many.
Thanks, Kim. Great, Kalia. I'm just going to mention your announcement for special topics at IW, July 22nd and August 4th. If you want to send me those or add a comment in the GitHub, we can update those on the list or send an email to the list. Thanks everyone for the meeting today. Thank you to Manu for scribing. Thanks for all of your comments and suggestions on everything. Next week, we are going to be having Victor from the CCG 101, who's going to be going over that survey that we sent to everyone. So that should be very interesting. If you are interested in a preview of that, we're going to be discussing that at the CCG 101 today at 2:00. So thanks everyone. Have an awesome day.